You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, CookUnity delivers. Made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. CookUnity was made for adventurous eaters. With 160-plus award-winning chefs curating an ever-expanding menu of small batch meals. Get ready to eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Their roster of Food Network alums, James Beard Award winners, and acclaimed restaurateurs balance bold flavors and nutrition in their handcrafted meals, which are freshly prepared, delivered to your door, and never frozen. Get what you're craving. Try the freshest, best-tasting meal delivery made by your favorite celebrity chefs. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter code CRAVE before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's free premium meals for life at cookunity.com/crave.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With expert advice and support from Vodafone, your business can make technology work for you. See vodafone.ie/business.
And I'm delighted to welcome to the Executive Chair this week, Jim Mead. He's the outgoing Éireann Road Éireann Chief Executive. Jim, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Bobby. Happy to be here.
Jim, I'm delighted to meet you because yours is a story I wanted to share with our listeners. Somebody who started in Éireann Road Éireann as an apprentice, who made his way all the way to CEO. It's a great credit to you and indeed to the organisation.
Thank you, Bobby. Yeah, I think it's, you put that very well. It's obviously my own input, but also the organisation's input. I started out back in 1979 as an apprentice fitter, bright-eyed young fellow from West Clare, I suppose with the world as my oyster. If somebody had sat me down in my first day up in Inchy Corps when I started my training and said, "Now, Jim, we're going to train you, you're going to work on your tools for years, you'll spend 18 years in engineering, you will go up through engineering, then you will go into strategic planning, then you will move over to operations, and one day you will have to run the company." I'd have certainly said there and then, no, that's not for me. I'm off back to West Clare. Thank you very much. So it kind of creeps up on you over time.
We'll come back to to your journey in a minute, but let me bring you back to those days in West Clare, in Kilrush. You grew up on a farm. I think maybe your early engineering interests were repairing tractors and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I grew up in a family in a little village outside Kilrush called Curra Clare. With seven
Which
siblings.
I know well, by the way.
I have seven siblings. And yes, I suppose in a farming community, you do a bit of everything. And I always had a bit of a mechanical leaning and I was always interested in things technical.
And when you then applied for an apprenticeship in CIE, as I presume it was then, what was that process or how did you find your way into getting the apprenticeship?
Well, I suppose at the time I had that leaning and that was the late 70s. Third level education wasn't free. So from a small farming community, big family, wasn't really an option. Whether I was would have been good enough for third level at the time didn't really count because money was scarce. So you applied to all the ESB, Aer Lingus, CIEs it was at the time, and other locations to see and did several interviews. And CIE as it was at the time came out on top.
And tell me then about how you, I suppose, found your way through the ranks. Let's talk about your first promotion.
Yeah.
You obviously qualified as a fitter.
I worked on the tools for almost 5 years and I suppose opportunities came up. And I suppose I was never afraid of a challenge. I would always look at something and say, yeah, I think I can add something there or I think I can contribute. So I became a supervisor in the workshop in Limerick, looking after the locomotives that hauled the trains at the time. And work up through that and then became manager of that complete depot 5 years after that. So I kind of moved every 5 years through my career as I look back over it. In point of fact, I've spent 7.5 years as chief executive and it's the longest time I've spent in any role in
yeah.
the company.
And that is, again, it's a great opportunity where you can kind of do something very different every 5 years or every few years because it keeps you energised and it keeps you sharp, no?
It keeps you sharp, it does, and it gives you new challenges and nobody should ever be afraid of a challenge. And I think that was one of my attributes is that I didn't fully understand the challenge I was giving myself or the risk I was taking, but you were never afraid because that's an organisation like Éireann Road Éireann as it is now offers you much more than just a job. It offers you that career, that career progression if you want to knuckle down. Take the challenges, do the work, you know, do whatever is thrown at you and move through the organisation over time.
Yeah. The apprenticeship programme within the business was discontinued, I think, during tougher times. which might have been short-sighted, I think, by the management or the executives at that time who made that call. But it is one of the challenges around a semi-state organization is that sometimes, even though you're the CEO, there can be political interference.
I suppose I would call it political interference. I think people make decisions, and sometimes they make short-term decisions, maybe for what they believe are the right reasons. But I believe you always have to have a long-term vision. And yes, the whole apprentice program was discontinued for a number of years by previous chief executives, but I always felt that it was our lifeblood going forward. And we had to create the people who are going to manage the organisation for the future. Rail is around for 190 years, and it's going to be around for another 190. So one of the many strands I looked at was how we develop our people and how we train for the future. And that was part of why I reinstated the apprentice program shortly after I took over as chief executive. And we also started a graduate program at the time. We also started a women in leadership program, looking at the future generations. And we looked at what we call the high potentials within the organisations. People who had come in, like myself, at very junior roles, be it apprenticeships, be it driving trains, be it working in stations, customer facing, be it out on what we call the permanent way, the infrastructure maintaining, but with loads of potential and loads of ability to move and be retrained and grow through the organisation. So we really put an emphasis on the future generations of managers and the future generations of people who would deliver.
It's been a real challenge, I suppose, over the decades to match the capital investment with the people's needs. In other words, populations have changed, populations have moved, and the rail infrastructure, being as capital intensive as it is, and it's not its fault, but it means that it can be slow to react to situations.
I think that's a very valid point. And one of the things that people miss generally is that it's not actually capital intensive in the true sense of the word. Because when we build new railways, as we are now, so we've just built a new line from Limerick out to Fines, reinstated what was there. That's a 100-year asset. So while the capital up front might seem bigger, that's going to be there. The track we laid over the last 18 months out to Fines, we will be looking at that same pieces of iron on the ground, the same sleepers, the same ballast in 70, 80, 90 years' time. Because that's the quality of what's done, and that's the quality of the rail. So over the life cycle of an asset, it's not capital intensive. But we have to build, and we have to look to the future and build, because the one thing we probably have got maybe quite right over the decades here in Ireland is we underestimate demand all the time.
And there must be some regret around ripping up the tram lines out to Dalkey, selling off the Harcourt line, all things that were done at the time. But when you look back and say, gosh, you know, if only we had hung in for another 10 or 20 years.
Absolutely. I mean, I suppose the one I miss the most maybe is the West Clare Railway that ran from my own county and a very scenic route. But I suppose we have to acknowledge that the people who made those decisions probably made the best decisions they could at the time with the information they had.
Yeah.
And you have to acknowledge, because people are generally good and they try and make the best decision they can. What we have to do, and these generations have to do, is understand those experiences and not make the same mistakes. Because if we do it again, we're making the mistake. I think they made the decisions they had to make at the time with the information they had. But the onus is on now is to rebuild that infrastructure. Infrastructure is what makes this country grow. I mean, I regularly say, and even when we were talking to government and to the Department of Transport about funding, we are not a draw on funding of this country, for this country or for the Exchequer. We actually contribute to the economy, because what we do helps the economy move, it helps the economy grow, it creates that environment where the economy can thrive. So like a lot of agencies, we actually enable the economy. We're not a draw on the economy.
And when we talk about something like Rosslare Port, which is part of the portfolio almost by default, but you've embraced that as an organisation, it's grown significantly over the last number of years.
Absolutely. Rosslare Port is a real success story. I suppose in the approach to Brexit, we just did a complete new master plan for it. And it's over 400% growth. We had pre-Brexit, we had six round trips to Europe a week. Now we have 36. The port itself, we've just finished a new master plan. We've been working with the OPW for the last number of years. Second biggest civil engineering project in the state for the last 2.5 years. Happening quietly in a live port. Working, as I say, the OPW ourselves and a really good contractor in John Paul Construction. We have delivered that in the last week and a half, on time, on scope, on budget, no fuss, through a live port. completely smart port. All the paper gone out of it, complete technology. You run the port now, and all done while a live operating port. So a real success story for us.
If you had a magic wand, and you can probably say this as you're the outgoing CEO, and you could have a pick of capital infrastructure, what would be a game changer in relation to changing the network if money wasn't an object?
I think the game changer for us now is to continue, is to move quickly with the electrification program and decarbonisation program. We now have three railway orders, clean railway orders, no JRs on them, to redevelop the Greater Dublin area. So triple the electrification, double the capacity. So we need to move forward quickly with that.
But are there not things like single tracks on the way down?
Oh, absolutely.
From Dublin to Wexford. Wherever, yeah. That would make a massive difference in terms of moving people in
absolutely
and out.
There would. And in fairness, that's why we worked with the Department of Transport to deliver the All-Ireland Strategic Rail Review, which is a vision of what this railway should look like by 2050. You know, totally decarbonised, a completely, I suppose, customer-focused railway that would do exactly what you said, add a lot of infrastructure, double tracking all the way to Galway, double tracking down to Waterford, adding that infrastructure that allows you to give a high-frequency service. Because you add the infrastructure that enables you to give the service to the customer. So you would put in double track, passing loops, more platform, wherever you need them. But the ultimate goal is to give the customer that service frequency. Nobody on the Dart thinks about a timetable anymore. They know there's a Dart service every 10 minutes. On the Lewis, which we all use very, very regularly, fantastic service, it's three-minute service at peak. We just turn up and go. And we need to get that with the rail service. And we've seen that. Cork Area Commuter Rail is a project we've been running that's coming to fruition. Now, we have, by the end of next year, we'll have all the infrastructure on the ground in Cork, double tracking, as you mentioned, new signalling, new platforms that will allow us put a 10-minute service into Cove, Middleton, Mallow for the Cork area. Putting that infrastructure in place means that we will have a Dart-type service in Cork for the generations to come.
What about interaction with the customer? You obviously, people get disappointed if their travel plans are disrupted, stuff goes wrong, you've got to go, sometimes you've got to put your hands up and say, sorry lads, we messed up here. What about that ongoing challenge of engaging with quite a demanding customer, let's call it?
Absolutely, and the customer expectation and the customer requirement is rising all the time, that's for sure. We constantly trying to strive to do better. Our customer base is growing every year on year. And we have that challenge of capacity all the time. And that, I suppose that's what drives customers sometimes to say, well, why can't we have more? And they deserve more, absolutely. They deserve more capacity, they deserve more. But we added, last year, by way of example, we added around 6% capacity to what we call our intercity rail car fleet, 41 new cars. And we heard it, we said to people, look, okay, we understand you're standing on some trains at peak times, but we're adding this capacity. Now, those customers are still looking at us and saying, where's the capacity? Because we grew by over 10%.
Yeah.
So some of those people are still saying, we were getting more trains, where are they? Well, they're actually there, but the demand grew more than the capacity we put in. Goes back to one of your earlier points, we need to plan in advance, we need to put in the infrastructure, we need to create that capacity because the demand constantly grows. We've seen that. We just went an hourly service across the border from Dublin Belfast last year, and that has gone by 40% in 3 months.
What about the catering trolley? A source of ire for many consumers.
Source of ire for many consumers. Yes, we lost it during Brexit, during COVID, and we brought it back on the Cork service. It's on the Belfast to Cork. It's a cost issue.
Surely it's a fundamental service that that should be on every train.
No, and we are currently in the market looking at the best and I suppose most cost-effective option for putting that back on the service. It is our intention to put it back, but not at any cost. We need to come up with a model that works for the customer and works for us from a cost point of view.
I'll sort it out for you. Yeah. Well, at a very low cost.
We'd welcome any suggestions, absolutely.
Jim Mead, pleasure to talk to you. Wishing you well in your retirement. You're a man who's done some service. So well done on a great career, great achievement. And thanks for coming in to chat to me here today.
Good to meet you, Bobby. Thank you very much.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, and with Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your favorites and still hit your health goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at hero.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.